guns. I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale. Hell, I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns. Well, I really like 22 Mag, 45 lever with the Winchester tag. I like my double barrel. Had it most of my life. 357 was a present from my wife. I like guns. I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale. Hell, I want them all. I like guns. I like guns. I like guns.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada. Our goal is to inform, update, and entertain the new shooter about the many fun and exciting aspects of sport shooting in Canada. Please remember that the show's content is simply the opinions of the hosts and our guests. And remember what they say about opinions. Everybody has one. So without delay, let me introduce our hosts, George Hatch and Tom Donnelly.
I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of New Shooter Canada. I'm George and my co-host
is Tom Donnelly.
How you doing, Tom?
Good. Yourself, George?
Not too bad, not too bad. Living the dream as always.
Is it right? Did you get to do those targets this weekend?
Yes, actually, let's jump into what we did with guns, since that's what I've done in guns this week. It's about the only thing I've done in guns. It's been a while since I've been to the range. I decided, since November was running out and I haven't done any of the arm scroll part project shoots, competition shoots, I thought I would give it a try. And I really didn't have time to do it any justice. I haven't shot my 22, and well, I can't really remember the last time I shot my 22. I've had it bouncing around in my car for a while, so I found out my scope is horribly off. So I did do the shoot. It, if you're wondering what I'm talking about, you can go on to Facebook.
Did you post your target?
I haven't yet. I'm not sure exactly. Just do a search for Armed Squirrel Project, and you should be able to find it. If I remember, I'll try and throw a note, so check the show notes, and I'll throw a link in the show notes. And basically, it's a picture of a turkey this month, because the Americans are having their Thanksgiving in November. And you got to hit certain points on the turkey. You get 10 shots, 2 minutes to do it, from any position you want to be. So I was sitting. Now, we don't have a 25, yard berm. Ours is 50. So I shot it at 50, but I got, I scored 2 out of 10. And my shots were kind of all over the map. So I'm going to blame it on the scope not being sighted in.
Are you allowed to put a target stand up at 25 yards? Like, if you had a portable target stand, do the range allow it?
Yeah. Over on our pistol section, we can.
Okay.
Because we've got, well, actually, on the pistol side, I could have gone to the pistol side. Theirs is, I think, 20 yards and 50 yards. So it's a little bit closer.
Yeah, you can bring a 22 over there, I imagine.
Oh yeah, that's usually where I take my girls, is over there, because we can bring the targets closer. So that's about it. I shot my Savage, and that was about it for this week. How about you? What'd you do in guns?
Well, I didn't actually do any shooting, but I did get some good news from Grandpa on Friday. As I mentioned in the last episode, I was having accuracy issues with the X-Trim. So Grandpa recrowned the barrel for me, but it just didn't seemed to improve the accuracy. So I assume they just give me a new barrel. No, they went one step further and gave me a brand new X-Trim. One with a new frame too. I think mine had the Mark 6 or Mark 7 frame. It was a solid trigger guard. And it took a little bit of effort to, if you want to take the gun apart, to pull the trigger guard down. And I didn't have a problem with it, but some people are really reefing on these things and they're breaking the trigger guards. So they came up with a new beefier frame. I think it's called a Mark 12. And the trigger guard pivots now. I think it's similar to a Glock. I'm not sure. And it's got a release similar to the Glock now. And the best thing, their business agent for Canada told me just to send him the gun in the case, that I can keep the mags that came with it. It came with three mags. So bonus. And then I'd already ordered another three mags with the gun. And then this new one's going to come with two mags. So I'm going to get eight mags out of the deal, which isn't too bad. And I was asking, so I mentioned to the business manager, would it be possible to upgrade it to the Excalibur? He said that would be between me and the distributor. It has nothing to do with him, that he's gone above and beyond the call of duty. What he did, instead of me having to wait another 6 months for a gun to come over from Europe, he asked the distributor if he'd give me one of the guns in stock, and they would give him a credit on the next order. And the distributor said yes. So the name of the distributor is Trigger Wholesale Group. They don't deal directly with the public, so you'd have to go speak to your gun shop and ask them to give them a call, and they can order any Grandpower product for you. So now I got eight mags. I don't know. The distributor said he would do it. I don't know what kind of price he'd do on it, but because they've gone up quite a bit. I think I paid under six for it. The list on the Xtrem now was $1,100. I think I've seen it selling for around $800-$900. So I'm going to do well on the deal.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that. So the customer service I've received from these guys has been awesome. When I got the gun, the business manager for Canada took me up to his place, told me how to completely disassemble the gun, how to tweak it. You know, he's answered all my Facebook inquiries. So out of all the gun companies I've dealt with, so far the best customer service by none, par none, has been from Grandpower.
Nice.
Besides that, I was off sick last week, so I got really, really, really bored, and I decided to go online.
Being trapped in your house can have that effect on a person.
It was cold out. I didn't want to go outside in the cold. I just felt like crap. So I felt like I could go online and look up the different insurance programs offered by in Ontario. And up here we've got four. We've got the Canadian Sport Shooters Association, the CSSA. We have the National Firearms Association, which we call the NFA. We also have the Canadian Firearms Institute, and we have the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters. Now, for a new shooter, when you join your first club, it'll be a condition of your membership to join the group that insures your club. So if you already have a membership with that group, it will be honored. So if I go to join a club that's insured, say, with the NFA, and I already have the NFA with the insurance, I don't have to pay the fees again. It's automatically transferred to the club. Your club's CSSA, George?
Yeah.
Or NFA?
Yeah, CSSA.
Yeah, same with me. So when I joined my clubs, because I already belonged to the CSSA, I didn't have to pay the additional membership fee when you joined the club. Now, the CSSA, the NFA, and the CFI, those are tongue twisters, they're all the carriers of primary insurance, which means if you don't have to exhaust your home insurance policy first and affect your premiums. But the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters is secondary insurance, and your home policy will have to be used up first. Then, if you don't have a home insurance policy, which most of us do, but if you don't, you could be, you know, a young person just starting out, you could not even own a home, then it becomes primary insurance if you have no other insurance. Now, the CSSA and the CFI membership fees were $45 a year, and that included the first, $5 million, I believe, in personal liability insurance. The CFI was formed a few years ago by Jim Newman and Piper Unit, and what they did is they splintered away from the CSSA and formed their own firearms advocacy group. I'm not aware of any of the details as why they left, except there were some internal political issues going on. And at least Larry Whitmore is no longer in charge of that organization, and Tony Bernardo is in charge of the whole thing, which is a good thing. And it looks like the CSSA has gotten a dose of their own bad medicine for what they dished out to the NFA 10 years ago over insurance issues. The CSSA lost Range Burlington, which I believe is like 1,500 members, one of the biggest clubs in the province, and lost six other clubs to the CFI. So the CSSA took a bit of a hitting from the CFI. So, as I said, their policies are all the same, CSSA, CFI, and the only difference is the NFA. Now, with the NFA, they did it a little bit differently, is that their membership price is $35, so that does not include the insurance. But a member can purchase the optional insurance $5 million personal liability for an extra $10. I think what they did is they want to attract people that already belong to the Ontario Federation of Angler Hunters or the Canadian Sports Shooters Association. They can offer you a membership that's cheaper, and they just take the insurance out since you already have an insurance policy. So, and they're all more or less the same. The CISSA, NFA, and the CFI, after I spoke to Jim, are all very similar. And the CFI also offers the $5 million individual liability. Now, I did speak to Jim of the CFI briefly. He returned my email today. He's a big action pistol shooter, too. So we're going to talk to him in a future episode and get a little more information about his group. Now, the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters is probably the biggest, if not in the province, in the country. It has over 100,000 members and 725 affiliated clubs. So I think that's more than the CSSA and the NFA and the CFI combined. They're a pretty big group. But their policy is a little less. It's at $3 million, but it covers a wider range of activities such as non-commercial fishing, trapping, target shooting. I did speak to them. They do cover action pistol as well, because their policy was a little vague on the internet. So they actually, I emailed them and they covered me back and said, yes, no, action shooting is covered. But you remember, it's secondary insurance. So your home insurance gets kicked in first. But so since it's secondary, they can afford to offer you a little more coverage because the risk is a little bit less because you already have a home insurance. So we'd highly recommend that any new shooter obtain a membership in one or more of these groups, even if only for the purpose of obtaining the personal liability insurance. There's other types up there. The NRA has some excellent insurance programs. They've got accidental death. They've got the legal one similar to the CSSA, but I don't think they're offered up here. Anything else new in guns, George?
No, not so much what I've done in guns. But perhaps we can move on to guns in the news.
Okay. What's the latest gun in the news?
We're going to talk about the RCMP Special Bulletin number 89.
Oh.
And this was dated November 14th, 2014. The issue is a non-restricted Russian SKS carbine has been found to discharge in full automatic manner, raising public safety concerns. I think that would raise some large public safety concerns. A bit of background. The firearm was purchased in Ontario by an individual who turned it into police of jurisdiction following discovery that it fires in automatic mode.
Slam fired.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's what it's sounding like, is it's a slam fire. Or repeated slam fire. The situation was subsequently brought to the attention of the CFO of Ontario. Well, this ain't going to end well now, is it?
No.
The RCMP, Canadian Firearms Program, has since provided technical support. The CFP examined and tested the non-restricted Russian SKS carbine in question and uncovered several safety concerns. It fires in automatic mode only. Now, I'm not liking the way they're wording this. Is it fires in automatic mode only?
Well, they're
the way it's worded, it sounds like you have like a selector switch where you could select automatic or semi, which isn't the case. It's a semi-automatic rifle. I'm being a little nitpicky on the wording a bit. The firearm is prone to discharge unintentionally, which is the slam fire. Which, you know, it's good to point this out for the new shooter because these are cheap guns.
Look at the next line. It tells you how it fires.
Yeah. And like, for instance, this was my dad's, my dad just got his license a year ago, and this was his first gun just simply because it was cheap. The ammunition is cheap, and it's got a bayonet, and he likes bayonets. So,
do you remember the year on the marking? Was it Tool Arsenal?
1952. I don't know if it's Russian or not.
Yeah, if it's Tool Arsenal, it's 52. If it says Tool Arsenal, it's Russian.
Yeah, it's 1952. So the firearm
has a free floated firing pin then. But continue. I'll explain it when you're done.
Okay, let me finish reading this. The firearm can be fired by simply releasing the cocking handle, which is the slam fire. If you just, when you pull the charging handle back and you just let it go, the bolt slams closed. I think I covered this in one of my earlier episodes. The bolt will slam closed, and if it's got the free floating pin, it could actually hit the primer, causing it to discharge without pulling the trigger. Does not include a functional safety mechanism. The CFP also examined 20 other samples of the same non-restricted Russian SKS carbine and found that they operated in semi-automatic fashion only.
Gee.
Probably because that's how they were designed. Imagine that. Implications and inspection protocol. This is a product safety issue for Russian SKS carbines, importers, and retailers because there is an increased risk to the public if the firearms fires in different manner than semi-automatic. Just a bunch of RCMP rubbish. So it's going to be a bit of a concern, because then it puts the SKS in a risk of being banned or reclass. Well, actually, if it's firing in full auto, they'll just change it to a prohib status, the way that they are.
The design itself was never designed to operate in full auto. You can't convert an SKS to full auto. There's no parts available can do it. You know what I'm guessing is that the Russian government exported 10,000 Tula Arsenal's SKS that were exported about 10 years ago. No, not 10 years, maybe 3-4 years ago. And the thing is, the retail pricing of those things are so cheap, $150, $200, and they're super deals. And for the first time, shooter or hunters are really, or military collectors even, they're popular because the ammo is so cheap right now. But you have to remember, your dad, you said 52?
Yeah.
Okay, I had a 52. So you remember, those things were put away in military storage for 50 years when they were designed, when they were replaced by the AK-47, which means those bolts are full of cosmoline, which was used for a long-term preservative. Now, when you get one of these SKSs from the store, the first thing you want to do is complete disassembly, clean up every single part. And the one thing you really want to do is, because those things get so dirty with that dirty surplus ammo, you want to clean that firing pin chamber, because if it gets blocked by grease and dirt, the firing pin may protrude from the bolt face, causing the gun to slam fire when the action returns to battery, not go full auto. And you can go on to YouTube, and there's all kinds of videos of this happening because people aren't properly maintaining them. So that's I'm guessing the guy... It probably has one of the tool arsenals that's free-floated, and it got dirty, it got full of crap, and he's never taken the cosmoline out of it. But later models did incorporate a new firing pin and spring into the design. Mine never came with it, just like your dad's. Mine's free-floated, and I bet if you take your dad's out, you're not going to find any spring in there. The pin's just going to float back and forth. And then you have to consider, too, that these guns were designed for heavy military primers. So using modern soft primers could be a contributing factor. So clean your SKS and see if you've got the spring inside your firing pin. If not, there's kits you can get online for about $40, and you can replace a smaller firing pin and the spring kit, so you won't have to worry about having slam fires. So you still get any parts for your AR, George?
No, I haven't. I haven't gotten any new parts, but what I thought I would mention is for the new shooter, I just kind of mentioned that I had a strip lower and a strip upper. And I know before I actually received these in the mail, I would have no clue what the heck a stripped upper or lower was. And so I thought I'd just quickly discuss what a stripped upper and lower is.
Okay.
Essentially, it's just the casing. It's got no parts attached, no parts inside, no nothing. And the reason why it's called an upper and lower is pretty self-explanatory. If you look at the body of an AR, there are two pieces. That's basically right down the middle. You have they divide in half, so you've got the upper half and the lower half, hence upper and lower, which makes sense. So your lower half, the parts that are going to attach to your lower half are going to be your mag well catch, your trigger group, your buttstock, and your pistol grip. Those are going to be kind of the core components. And your safety and your I guess that would be it. Did I miss anything?
So in Canada, the lower, that's the serial number components.
So yes, that's your actual restricted component.
Okay.
So, for instance, this is how ridiculous it is. When I received my strip lower, so it's basically just a casing with a serial number, I had to take that casing, put a trigger lock on it, and then lock it in my safe.
Isn't that crazy?
Isn't that nuts?
So, the other thing, too, that if the new shooter wants to build an AR while they're waiting for their license, they can still order all the other parts. They can order the upper and the springs and get all the parts together until they get their actual license, and they can order that lower. They can have everything ready to go except that one little piece.
Yes. and so that's basically the lower. Now, the upper is obviously going to be the top half, and that's going to be the pieces that are going to be attaching to that is, well, your bolt carrier group is going to be inside, so that's where your bolt's going to be. Your charging handle is going to be hooked up to there. Your forward assist is actually, if you have one, it's built right into the upper. Your barrel's going to be attaching, to your upper. And, I believe that's it. And then I've got it, on the top of mine is a Picatinny. Are they called Picatinny rails?
Yeah, on the ARs it's Picatinny.
Picatinny. So, and then that's where any of your, if you got a scope or, I guess your carrying handle or whatever sights you have, you're going to use on your AR. So that's basically what a stripped upper and lower are. It's just really just the casings, the top half and the bottom half of the main body when you're looking at it. And so I'm hoping that come January, once we get on the other side of Christmas, because I've been dropping hints to family members about, AR parts, and I get a lot of eye rolling and, yes, dear. Okay, dear. And of course, my dad's just kind of looking at me doing like the George Burns, excellent. So, he's excited about this, but it doesn't seem anyone else is. So I'm not expecting anything under the Christmas tree. So my next purchase I'm going to do is going to be in January, and that will be my lower parts kit, which is going to be my safety, my trigger, the pins to attach the upper and lower, mag release.
Well, do yourself a favor. Don't drop a mil-spec trigger into it. Go at least spend the extra money and get a nice trigger for it. If you're going to go all that to build it, give it a nice trigger.
Yeah,
it might do sense.
It was. It's been about a month and a half. Was it September, October? September, October. I was looking at prices, and NEA. My upper and lower are NEAs, and they had for $100 a lower parts kit. And it had the NEA trigger in it, trigger group. But then there was another one, and it escapes me what the brand was, but it was like $130. So, that'll be my next process in January. Right now, it's too much torture trying to look at AR parts because then I want to buy them.
Oh, I know. You go online, you start looking. I read a lot of gun magazines, and you see all the stuff out there. And did you see the new Ruger AR?
Ruger's first production in the AR market has a gas operating system, and they've now introduced their first direct impingement AR. So some of the features on the Ruger AR is a milled carbine length gas block. I'm not really sure what that is. What is that?
Well, the gas systems come in different lengths with the barrels. So it's a carbine. It's a short barrel, so it's got a short gas system.
Gotcha. Now, what's gas block?
That's the part where the actual gases come in and your front sight. I believe that's the gas block.
Oh, okay. It's got a front sight Front sight post is elevation adjustable, and front sight tool is included. Well, that's good. The A2 style F height allows co-witness with many optics. Now, what does co-witness with many optics mean?
Well, if you have a red dot, a lot of the times when you look through the red dot, your red dot is actually right the same height, the same marking as your front sight. So if the right, if you're using the red dot and your front sight goes, for some, you lose the red dot, for example, you've still got your front sight.
Okay.
And what you do a lot of times, too, is you put your optics in the middle, so you have your front sight at the back. So when you hold it up, your front sight's not covering your target. Your red dot's actually on top of your front sight. So the two of them are co-witnessing. You're seeing the same thing. You're seeing whatever you're seeing with the red dot, you're seeing with the front sight, too. So it's like a double co-witness.
Gotcha.
And if it dies, you just flip up the rear sight on that thing, and you've got optics.
Gotcha. Okay. And that's the next point, is it's got a folding rear sight, six-position telescoping, M4 style buttstock, multiple attachment points, including a QD socket and bayonet lock.
What's QD stand for?
No idea.
Actually, I knew I should have spelled it out. Quick disconnect.
Quick disconnect socket.
Yeah, QD, quick disconnect.
Cool. And a bayonet lock. I was just watching.
I shortened it. It did say quick disconnect, but I put QD near. I thought you, it was my mistake.
Yeah, you got to dumb it down for me. I'm a truck driver. You got to dumb it down.
Okay.
But the bayonet lock. I was just watching. Going to have a little squirrel moment here. I was just watching a video on Facebook the other day. It was a marching drill, a Marine Corps marching drill, dress drill, and they all had bayonets, nice shiny chrome bayonets on their ARs. And I was watching, and I'm like, I need a bayonet for my AR. I've got no practical reason for it, other than I can, so I will.
I bet you Owen has one.
So, probably. So, I don't know. I had to scroll there because it said bayonet lug. What's that?
I think Styx has one, too.
I understand why the military would have them. The general population, you know what? I want one because I can. So, right.
They just add weight and make the gun front heavy, but that look cool.
But in Canada, it doesn't really matter because we're stuck at the range with them. So it's not like we're going to go through the woods. We have to worry that much about weight. Like, I suppose if you're running and gunning, doing some three gunning, but really, how much running and gunning are you doing in a three gun match with your AR?
I think within the States, guns that were imported from other countries, they can't have a bayonet lug. I think they have to be cut off.
Oh, really?
So you'll get SKSs that come into the States. And they don't have the bayonet lug because of something to do with the Clinton assault weapons ban or something.
No way.
Bayonet lugs became bad. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
I'm going to stab you with my gun. So, all right. So to the next
point. How long is the barrel on the Ruger?
I was just moving on to that. It's a 16.1-inch medium contour barrel with a 1/8 twist rate. Now, in conversations offline, you've asked me about what barrel length and twist rate, and that's all Greek. I have no idea what any of that stuff means. And when I go to buy my barrel, I'll educate myself. But the listeners that do know what that means, it has a 6.1-inch medium contour barrel with a 1/8 twist rate.
Yeah, I know what it means. It's, well, you can get different barrel weights. So sometimes some of the barrels are pencil thin, you get a medium barrel, or you can have a bull barrel. And the twist rate is going to affect the flight of the projectile. So usually some of the faster twists don't accommodate the heavier bullets, I believe. So you have to match the twist rate to the weight of the projectile that you're using.
Yeah,
Brian Boulevard can give you much more specific information on twist rates. Because I think you can get like a 1 in 7, 1 in 8. I think standard's 1 in 9. Mine's a 1 in 9.
I don't know. He seems to be making the rounds in the podcasting circuit. So maybe if he hasn't become too much of a podcast snob, maybe we'll get him on the show and he can talk about barrel length and twist rates with us.
I wouldn't call him a podcast snob. More of a podcast slut. Yeah, it's probably more accurate with Brian.
I was trying to put polish a turd, right? Actually, I'm calling Brian a turd.
No, I like Brian. He's a decent guy. I've met him a couple times. I've got no bad things to say about Brian Boulevard. But he is much more knowledgeable when it comes to rifles and twist rates and bullet weights, because
yeah.
he's a competition rifle shooter, so he could give you a much better idea of what you need for different distances or different games.
Yeah, when he was doing his show, the service Canadian service conditions, I remember he had talked about it on a couple shows. At the time, I didn't really commit much of it to memory because I wasn't building an AR then. So.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Stacy and I are pissed at him, eh? He promised that if he got enough interest that he would reorder some, and I've got mine on, actually. You can see on the screen, I've got my Canadian Service Conditions t-shirt on. This t-shirt gets more comments than any other t-shirt I've ever owned. So he said if he had enough interest, he'd order some. So I want 4 or 5. Like, I wear these every day to work. You know, if he's going to order 20 t-shirts, I'll take half of them. So I emailed him, and I said, look, no, Stacy and I want some t-shirts. He's, oh, no, I don't have the time. It's going to cost too much money, blah, 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 blah. So now we're not getting our t-shirts. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Oh, did I just hear the bus backing up?
Just a little bit. But Stacy may put it in gear and run over him again.
Okay. All right. Three more points to cover, and then we'll move on to your segment. The Ruger flash suppressor is provided with, okay, this is looking Greek, a half inch dash 28 threaded.
Yeah, the barrel's threaded, so you can, and it's, the twist on that is so you can put a suppressor on it. If you want to take the flash suppressor off, or you want to put a muzzle brake on it, you can change the ends.
Ah, gotcha. Flash suppressor is provided with a half inch threaded. Okay, gotcha.
So the barrel's probably half inch, and it's a 28 thread.
28 thread. Okay, gotcha. See, I'm a complete AR virgin, so that's why I wanted to read through this, because it's all Greek to me, so I'll just throw it back to you for the explanation.
When we get your barrel, you might want to get it threaded. Like with my Remington, it's got a target crown, and it's meant for hunting. It's a 20-inch, it's a long-range barrel. It's meant for hunting, so I don't want to really put a muzzle brake on it. But if you're competing, the muzzle brake makes a big difference, because even though they don't recoil a lot,
no.
But getting rid of that, if you're doing a 3-gun and you want to get fast on target, you want to put a muzzle brake on there. So at least it gives you the option of taking it off.
Kind of like putting a compensator on a 22.
Similar, very similar.
That one was for Trevor. Trevor, that one was for you, buddy.
That actually just adds weight out front. That's all it does. It just with the 22. It does work a little bit, but it doesn't generate the gas. It's funny, you stand beside somebody who's shooting a short-barreled AR with a muzzle brake,
oh,
it's nasty.
It
is nasty.
And you know what I noticed? I noticed this shooting yours back in the summer. When you're holding it and you're the shooter, there's hardly any noise. It's quiet. There's hardly any recoil. There's no concussion. But you stand next to the person shooting, it's loud. There's a concussion. Obviously, you're not going to feel a recoil. But it blew my mind.
Well, if it had a muzzle brake, it'd be 20 times as worse.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was shooting. I was trying to sight in my 22 at the range, sitting down, and the guy was shooting a 300 Win Mag with a muzzle brake on it. And when he pulled that trigger, and I was sitting beside him, so when he pulled that trigger, it felt like I got hit from head to toe with a 2x4 at once. Just the concussion. So if you're beside it, it's even worse with the muzzle brake.
Oh.
But yeah, you're right. You don't notice it as bad if you're directly behind it, because the gas is going out or in front of you. But
yeah.
When you're side, and you get hit.
Yeah. Yeah, that quite surprised me. Last 2 points, it's got enlarged trigger guard for easier gloved shooting, a very important feature for us folks up here in Canada. And the retail price, drum roll, $750. Actually, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's competing with the Smith & Wesson M&P Sport.
I'm looking at the picture here in the show notes, and it's a pretty sexy looking gun.
Well, the thing I like about it is that the M&P Sport actually does what it's priced to compete with. It doesn't have a forward assist, and the Ruger does. Ruger's got everything. Nothing's been cheaped out on this gun. And even the grip itself is nice and big. It looks nice. I wonder, probably a couple years before we get them up here, though.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're, the Americans get all the toys first. Which I suppose is alright, because they're the ones making them. Although, that's what I like about NEA. When I went on the forum, when I first bought my lower, there was a bit of love-hate going on with the NEAs, and I'm no expert, so I just got a broad general feeling. But I kind of got the sense that NEA went through a bit of growing pains where they had some quality control issues. And it seems like they've worked through most of those. Are you familiar with any of that?
I heard, was it Owen was having a problem with his lower and upper didn't match. But I think a lot of the problem was cosmetically. There was a lot of blemish problems. The bluing wasn't holding up. But I haven't heard anything. I've heard all good things about them lately.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I don't know anybody who's had one who's had any problems.
And you know what? The matching up with the upper and the lower, the thread I went on online, somebody had posted what uppers fit with the NEA lower, because I think it was Ammosource had $65 lowers on sale. And so there was, you know, there were guys on there, you know, you're always going to have the haters, but there were guys on there saying, well, you know, this one kind of works, this one works, this one works. And the majority of them said, you know what, if you have an NEA lower, get the upper. They're designed to fit together, and your chances of having problems are going to be much reduced. So I thought, you know what, that's what I'm going to do. I just went ahead and ordered the upper, the NEA upper, and I thought, you know what, I can go, all my other parts can be whatever I want, but at least my upper and lower were made to fit together.
Well, that's a good idea.
So, and that seemed to be kind of one of the main problems. And the bolts, something to do with the bolts. They were having issues with their bolts or something.
That was a big complaint I heard about the Norks, is their rifles aren't to spec, military spec. So a lot of times if you change off, they don't fit properly.
Right. So before we move on to your CZ Dan Wesson, I thought I would bring up one last thing about ARs. And this is... this is kind of an AR 101. And this is, again, this isn't going to be terribly in-depth just because my knowledge isn't terribly in-depth. But one thing I did want to talk about real quick before moving on was the gas systems of the ARs. There's two different systems. There's a piston system and then a direct impingement system. And quite often when you hear people talking about ARs, you'll hear one or the other of those terms. So they'll either be talking about a pistol, you'll hear much piston or direct impingement. And I always wondered, what the heck are they talking about? And then, actually it wasn't even an AR, it was my dad's SKS that really kind of gave me that aha moment. Because when we stripped it, he goes, oh, and this is my piston. And it looks like a car piston.
Yeah.
It's tiny, obviously, and it's got a big, long rod. And I'm looking at it, and we're putting it back together, and I'm like, oh, I get it now. And it's amazing. When you hear it talked on podcasts, you don't really, like, it's this mythical thing. You have no idea, unless you've seen it and touched it, you have no idea how to picture it in your head and relate it, right? Unless somebody does this and explains it. So what the piston is on your barrel, there will be a hole at the top of your barrel for the gases to come through, and there will be a tube attached to that. It's your gas tube. So when you fire your round, some of the gases escaping will come up that hole into your gas tube. And once the gas gets into the gas tube, this is where the two differences apply. The piston, that gas is going to hit the top of a piston, and when it hits that piston, it pushes the piston back, which in turn, that rod that's attached to the piston drives back, hits the bolt. That's what pushes the bolt back and cycles your bolt. A direct impingement is going to have the gas tube going straight into your chamber. So it's going to be those gases, when they enter the gas tube, they're going to shoot down the gas tube, and the force of that gas is what's going to push your bolt back and cycle it. So those are the two differences. That's piston and direct impingement. Now, going to touch on some pros and cons real quick here. The piston system, one of the cons are the parts are proprietary to the manufacturer, and so you're going to, you may have like availability issues. There's more moving parts to break, and because the piston's obviously a metal part, so it's going to add a bit more weight. One of the pros is because the gas is hitting that piston, it's not blowing into your chamber, so your gun's going to run cleaner. It's going to run cooler and have less recoil, because that piston's going to absorb some of the oomph, and it's going to reduce your recoil. So for me, that's likely the path I'm going to take when I'm building my ARs. I'll probably go piston, just because of the cleaning aspect of it. Now, if you're going to be a recreational shooter, you know, you may not want to do this, but if you're going to be getting into three gun, then you're going to want to make sure you've got extra parts. But you're going to want to make sure you got like extra parts, basically everything, but especially the piston. Because if you bend that rod or it gets damaged in any way, you've now basically got a single shot AR. You've lost your semi-automatic capability. So that's going to be a major consideration. If you're going to be competing and you're going to go with a piston, that's going to be a major consideration. Now, the direct impingement, if you're not lazy like I am and you don't care about cleaning your rifle, this is probably a pretty good choice. It's mil-spec parts. It's going to be readily available. It's just less moving parts. It's a gas tube, right? So your gas tube is just going to go straight into your chamber, and that's what's going to be pushing your bolt. So there's no extra parts in the way. It's just, you know, direct gas. Now, the cons are, it's just one really, and that's, it's going to get dirty. Because all that burnt carbon and everything that's in the gas from the gunpowder burning is going to get blown back into your chamber. So it's going to get dirty, and it's probably going to get dirty pretty quick. That's kind of your piston and your direct impingement. So that is going to conclude my AR talk for this evening. So I will turn it over to Tom.
Well, the other thing new in guns that I notice is that CZ, who owns Dan Wesson, is back in the revolver business. Now, they have been putting out some fine 1911s for the last few years, and now they've actually got a revolver out in the market under the CZ name. And it's the 715, and if you're not familiar with them, they're a switch barrel 357. Now, this gun, it's nice. It's really nice. It comes with a 6-inch, it's stainless steel, comes with a 6-inch barrel, and they call it a HV, or heavy vented shroud. So the lug under the barrel, it's massive. It's this huge square thing that runs the entire length of the barrel. And the user can easily switch barrel assemblies and grips. The 715 also accepts grips and barrel shroud assemblies from series 15, 2, or model years, or newer. So if you've got an older Dan Wesson, it might be interchangeable, or the barrel will be interchangeable. Now, most revolver barrels are a press fit and then pinned to the frame. And any barrel replacement, like if I want to take my Smith & Wesson in to get a new barrel, I have to take it to the gunsmith. But Dan Wesson uses a tension barrel system that's user replaceable. And their system is supposed to enhance accuracy, because I think the locking lug's in the front. So when you tighten up the barrel, they're saying it vibrates, enabling it to vibrate at the same frequency every time. So I guess because you've got constant tension on it. So I wonder if it vibrates, if it can also detune like a guitar string. If anybody's ever seen the Taurus Raging Bull, the lockup is very similar to that on the CZ. It's the fourth, is that the crane lock is located in the front of the cylinder, paired with a rear detent ball. So it gives it a little bit stronger lockup compared to the rear locking designs of other revolvers. Here, remember, this is a competition gun. It's not a competition gun. This is a target pistol, because the way you'd have to unload it, you'd have to push the detent down, flip the crane out, then lift it up, pop it out. So there's an extra level of manipulation in loading and unloading revolver because of this front latch. I fired some 357s and a 44 Magnum in the Dan Wesson Maximum series. And these things are nice guns, but they retail for around $1,500 up here, so I don't think I'll be getting one for Christmas.
Ouch. I know, I definitely will not be.
Yeah. I can't afford one.
$1,500. Hey, that $1,500 will go a long way towards AR parts and beer.
Well, I only had enough money to buy a pair of shoes. That's how broke I am these days. I bought a pair. You know what? I actually went out and I bought a pair of super, super nice running shoes. So actually, that's one of our main topics tonight, is that there's one piece of equipment that is neglected by both new and experienced shooters, yet it's the most important piece of gear that does not go into your range bag, or does it? Your shoes. Now, your shoes give your body the proper balance and support for precision shooting, the safety and traction for running between stages and action shooting, so it's important to match your footwear to the game at hand. A nice pair of comfortable sole leather shoes will be fine if you're doing one-handed bullseye shooting, or a nice pair of cowboy boots will suit your cowboy action attire.
But
if you're running between stages on a wet, slippery surface, those leather-soled shoes are going to land you on your ass pretty fast. And the older we get, the harder we fall, and you don't want to get a DQ running between stages. So if you go look at some of the YouTube channels of some of the top shooters, like Rob Leatham, or better yet, go look at Mo Hepworth, the guy from Action Pistol. Look at the running shoes that he used. I think he's using Asics, and they're such a horrible color, I think he spray-painted them blue. But the top shooters out there, they're wearing high-quality athletic running shoes designed for proper support and traction, all-day comfort. So don't cheap on your shoes if you're shooting, and just remember to take those shoes and wear them in for a couple weeks before taking to your next match, but they're probably the most important aspect of your range here is what you got on your feet.
Now, that's interesting. One of the things that kind of concerns me when we're doing cowboy shooting is kind of something that you just touched on about running with the leather-soled shoes when it's wet. And fortunately with cowboy shooting, it's more you're firing line is straight across, so there's no running around. It's just kind of moving maybe 4 or 5 feet to your left or to your right. But that's often been, there's been a few wet matches where I've often wondered, I wonder how many times people have slipped, because cowboy boots are not known for their rugged soles for you know what I mean?
We've had a couple people wipe out at our range. We have an Action Pistol League, and one of the girls took a bad fall last year, but 3 or 4 years ago we had a young guy, new shooter, and we set up a barrel that was a penalty. You had to go around the barrel. So, of course, we're not used to doing that in this course of fire. So, of course, I went around the barrel, and I got the whistle. I got DQ'd. You know, so I waited for the range officer to come down and make me, show clear and holster. And so the guy just after me, he does the exact same thing. But when he goes down there, he slips and he spins. And he turns around, and he's got his loaded gun, and he sweeps the entire clubhouse with his loaded gun.
Oh, no.
Because he slipped, yeah. Yeah, he got DQ'd.
Yeah, no doubt.
But he just slipped. And luckily, he didn't have his finger on the trigger. And when he spun around and he turned around, he was facing upraised with everybody was sitting. So it does happen. That's why I mentioned, shoes is a good thing to mention to people.
Yeah. And you know what? Until you had brought it up, because all I've ever done is cowboy shooting. I never really put much thought into it. That's the last piece of equipment I have left to buy. I've got everything else. So I've always just worn my work boots, and they've got a decent tread on them. So I haven't really worried about it. But
this chili shoot that's coming up, eventually the guys will all be wearing winter boots.
Yeah,
they're wearing non-slip soles because they're probably going to limit the running. Actually, listening to the podcast, and they're going to limit the running between stages because of the safety issues of people wiping out on the ice.
Yeah. Yep. So
it's
yeah,
probably going to be December, and the range is probably going to be all kinds of ice downrange.
Yeah, very. It's very, very good thing to be mindful of because, like I said, it's been kind of on my mind, but unless you've actually done a match, I don't think, like for the new shooter, until I started cowboy shooting, it would never have been on my radar.
You don't think about it. You actually need them.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so...
So what's our next topic, George?
Well, in the show notes it says beer break, but I'm
I included one for you. I need time to pause and run and get a beer. I did put them in.
I'm out of beer, so
okay.
That's almost sacrilege. So we'll just move on to our next topic, and that's buying a used gun. Now we're going to do a bit of a mini series on this. So look forward to future parts to this. So I'll get started here. For most new shooters buying, that first firearm can be a big investment. Sometimes when we first join a club, we just don't know or don't have the extra money to buy a new gun. Now I kind of did everything kind of ass backwards. I bought the gun and had nowhere to shoot it. I would not suggest that because that just... You know, it's like buying a cake and then putting it in a glass box and locking it and not being able to eat it.
You can look at it.
You can look at it and touch it.
The holsters on.
So I think the smart thing to do is to get your club first and then go out and get the gun. But like I know with my club and I'm assuming that most clubs are this way, is you've got like an initiation fee for first time our brand new members. So you gotta take that in consideration. And if you're in Ontario, clubs can be a little pricey. So it's not gonna leave a lot of money left over to be buying a gun. So you may want to consider a used gun. Quite often they're a third to half the cost of a current new model. And you get some great deals, for a cared for used gun. But you have to know what to look for when it comes to wear and damage on a used firearm. A little holster wear or a few scratches will not affect the safety, function, or accuracy of the gun, but those little blemishes can save you lots of money in the used market. Like anything in life, you buy the floor model, it's got maybe have a ding here, a scratch there, you can usually knock some money off, right? So cosmetic, you know, if there's a bit of cosmetic to it, you know, that's just going to save you some money. And for a new used gun, it's, if it's going to save you money, not a bad idea. Now, for the new shooter out there, don't be impatient and go and buy the first good deal somebody offers you at your new club. Time and time again, all us old timers have seen the same old timer at a club drop a piece of junk into the hands of an inexperienced shooter. Ask a few knowledgeable shooters who are not a friend of the seller, very important there.
Yes, yes.
What they think of the gun. You're not the first person they have tried to sell it to, and it has probably changed hands a few times at your club.
I've seen that happen numerous times.
Yes. Be patient. Do a little research. Make an informed decision before you agree to buy anything. And shoot it first to ensure that it is safe, functions properly, and is accurate. Now that may sound to the new shooter like, what? How the heck am I going to do that? So, if you're not sure of your skill set, well, one of the things you can do, any new shooter should be able to do, is sit down and bench shoot it, for groups. If your shooting skills are just developing, maybe ask an experienced shooter to test fire it for you. Over the next few episodes, we will talk about what to look for when buying a used firearm, help you make a more informed decision. So, really, it's what I did. Well, like I said, I kind of did it ass backwards. I went and bought a rifle. I brought my Savage. But when it came time to kind of actually move on from just sitting and shooting my .22, and I wanted to get into the cowboy shooting. That's what I did. I met the cowboy guys, came out to some of their shoots, or to the practices. They let me shoot a bunch of different pistols, so I got to handle a bunch of different pistols. And now I went and bought all brand new, because I'm a bit of an idiot that way. It's, you know, that may not be a bad idea, and it gives you, it'll give you, experience on a wider range of firearms, pistols, or whatever the action shooting. If you're going out for, if you're more into IPSC or IDPA, then you're going to be shooting semi-auto pistols. But it, you know, usually they're pretty friendly, and if you kind of build a bit of camaraderie. And, you know, then when you do find that person that's selling a pistol, you can always say, hey, listen, you know, go to your buddy on the cowboy team and say, listen, I want to buy this pistol. Can you come check it out for me? I don't know much about it.
Yeah,
and,
idea.
You know,
idea.
Like, I know the guys that I shoot with, they would have, now I bought brand new, so I didn't have this situation. But I know if somebody had come up to me and said, hey, you like cowboy shooting? I got a revolver for you. I'd have no idea. I wouldn't have had a clue if it was a piece of junk or if it was good. But I know I could have gone to my cowboy buddies and say, listen, this guy wants to sell me a revolver. Can you come out on this day, shoot it for me, and let me know what you think of it?
Tell me what you think. Give me your honest opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it basically protect your butt. Because as much as we're all gunners out there and we're all a community and, you know, we all love to hold hands and sing Kumbaya, there's always bad apples in the bunch, right?
I've gotten some good deals actually up at my gun shop on Fort Perry, Williams Arms. I've gotten, over the years, probably 8 or 9 used firearms arms off him, and they're all been pretty good. Anytime John takes something in, it's a consignment sale. So you, no matter what you take him, he takes it to the range and he test fires it and makes sure it functions properly. Not all stores do that, I assume, but you can still go to some of these on-time retailers, and you can buy used stuff online from a reputable business, and usually they'll warrant the product for a month or two.
Now, Williams Arms is not a sponsor of the show, but I'm going to give them some love too, because that's actually who I bought my cowboy rig from, and it was, I'm going to say, 3 years ago now, so I can't remember who I was dealing with. But I'd called around to a bunch of places. All the places were very nice, but I ended up settling with Williams Arms, and very nice. They were awesome. Awesome to deal with. Quick service. Just, I was very pleased.
I've probably been dealing with John for about 20 years. Everybody that works in the store, actually, they all belong to my gun club. So if I go shooting during the week, during the day, quite often I can see the owner of the store in there with a couple of guns that he's putting up for sale, and he's test firing them. So I know they actually do it.
Yep.
I saved a fortune. I got a Smith & Wesson 625 revolver, and I think it was a few years ago. I think I paid like $550 for it. You can't even get that barrel length up here, and I just had an IPSC shooter offer me double what I paid. I sold it for almost double what I paid for it, and the gun was at least 15 years old.
Yeah, and you're the king of winning pistols at dinners. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, it's been, not lately.
I don't remember how many times I got a Facebook message from you. Hey, look what I just won. Interested? What was that one cowboy revolver?
Well, that was the Imberti. It was a 72 Colt. So what it was a transition year when they went from open cylinder, black powder, before they had the full top strap. So it was a cartridge revolver with no front strap.
Okay.
So I didn't like the idea of, you get blinded kind of when you fire a shot since there's no top. Like, it's bad enough that you have the gases escaping from the BC gap. You got no top strap, you get the gases coming straight up. You get a little flash show every time you pull the trigger. I never even fired it. I never even picked it up from the gun store. I walked in, I looked at it, I said, nah, let's put it up for sale.
it was gorgeous. It was beautiful. If I had the money, I would.
If you're like a collector of a specific piece, it was a very rare Colt copy. They only made, I mean, it's actually in the book my grandmother gave me. They only made like under 600 of these, so it's a very rare if you even find an original. So it looked cool, but just it's not my thing. I wouldn't mind a nice, you know, 73, nice single action, but I just don't like the look of the open cylinders or with no frame, and it looked like you still had the rod for ramming your charges underneath.
Yeah,
I don't like those.
Oh yeah, before I caught the AR bug, my next purchase was going to be one of those black powder 1800 black powder revolvers, where you put the powder straight into the cylinder, put the ball in, and then the plungers, like the right below the barrel.
Yeah.
And because
have you ever fired one?
No, but I've seen them on YouTube, and it just every time I'm like, oh, that makes me tingle.
What you have to do is bring a couple pair of shooting glasses, because every time you fire that, because you're loading the faces of the chamber with grease so you don't get a flash fire.
Right.
So every time you fire that, your face gets embedded with grease from these stupid cylinders. So I was shooting a friend of mine one afternoon, and after an hour, I couldn't see out of my glasses because it was just impregnated with grease.
Hey, you know, they've got conversion kits for those where you can actually shoot cartridge rounds out of them now.
Yeah, I guess depending on the revolver.
But that's just, you know, you shouldn't. That's like putting wood on an AR in that, you know, in the words of Trevor.
I don't know if you've ever seen a Turnbull Restoration AR. It's pretty sweet.
So, and then if it wasn't going to be one of those, it was going to be a black powder muzzle loader. So that kind of gives everyone an idea of what era of firearms I'm kind of into. But I've got the AR bugs, so I'm going to build my AR first, and then I'll go back to my oldies, my golden oldies.
Well, if you want to get a muzzleloader for hunting, like they're dirt cheap, and it gives you an extended season. So I could see that if you want to get a rifle for hunting.
Yeah.
But to me, it's just too much work doing black powder. And you're not allowed to fire them indoor at my range. Black powder is outdoor only because it makes such a mess.
Oh, yeah, the smoke.
The smoke and the grease splatter.
Well, and you know what? You can actually get – I think you can get – you know what? Don't quote me on this. But for some reason, I believe you can get smokeless powder. They're like a pressed pellet.
Yes.
And you can shoot them out of a muzzle loader, and they're smokeless.
Is it Pyrodex? Yeah, they're just little pellets. And each pellet has a specific charge.
Yeah.
So depending what you're doing, you can drop one or two pellets. And they're pretty accurate.
But again,
Ryan was shooting it.
If you're shooting a muzzle loader, shoot black powder. Daniel Boone would go boom, and then you couldn't see him. He could run away because it's just a big smoke cloud.
And there's no gas port. It's easier to clean, I guess, than an SKS, but it's the same thing. As soon as you fire it, you got to clean it.
Yeah.
If you don't clean it that day, it's going to erode instantly.
Yeah.
And by that night, it's got to be clean by the time you get home.
Yeah, and that's one of the factors that's kind of deterring me is because I'm a bit of a lazy gun cleaner. So
you don't want a gas piston AR, then you want direct impingement if you're lazy.
Exactly. So
it makes you work for the gun.
Yeah.
So what was that? You said you saw something in the Hunting Reds about firewood on Crown land lately?
Yes. We were talking about this last show about how I was talking about going up on Crown land, backpacking, and that sort of thing. And flipping through the hunting rigs, I came across this. And so I thought I would share it with everybody in case anyone was interested in doing the backcountry camping on Crown land. It's you need a license or license needed to harvest firewood on Crown land.
So this is a liberal tax.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, okay.
A license is required to harvest or collect firewood on Crown land for the purpose of generating heat for personal use, such as in a furnace or a wood stove. You need a license to harvest. Like, just listen to the wording they use. Just drives me nuts. You need a license to harvest forest resources for personal, non-commercial use, also known as a personal use firewood license. So basically, you need a license to pick up frickin' firewood.
Exactly. you could be freezing to death, but they want you to have a license where you pick up that piece of wood for your own safety.
Oh, my goodness. So I'll continue on. The license is issued for 1 year, April 1st to March 31st, and can be obtained any time during the year. Licenses may only be obtained at a Ministry of Natural Resources district office at ontario.ca/MNR offices. For more information, visit ontario.ca/forests. A fuel wood license may authorize you to gather wood from slash piles in designated fuel wood areas and or areas where commercial harvesting operations have been completed. The type of wood and areas you may harvest from vary depending on your location. Your license will also advise you whether you can harvest standing trees in crown forests. Under the Crown Forest Sustainability Act, individuals may be charged with illegally harvesting firewood.
Now, isn't that the biggest frickin' crop you've ever heard of?
I don't even know what to say. I feel my go button getting pushed. They're becoming so oppressive with all these levels of licenses and fees and this and that. They're just going to nickel and dime you right to death to the point where you're going to say, you know what? First of all, you're going to need like 5 or 6 different frickin' licenses and permits and this crap and that crap. Like, the whole idea of this crown land is you throw a backpack on with a tent and you go out into the bush for a week.
Well, it's similar to the public lands down in the States. It's lands for free to use for the public.
Yeah, that's what your tax dollars. Like, it's all of our lands. That's what it's ours because we pay taxes, right? And, you know, now it's, you know, if you want to go fishing, you need a fishing license. If you want to hunt, you need a hunting license. You know, okay. But you know what? If you want to hunt duck or geese, now you get another license. You want to hunt turkey, you need another license. You want to hunt big game, now you need another license. You want to do this, you need another license. Oh, now you need license for firewood.
Well, next thing you know, it's going to be air. They've taxed everything else.
Like, it's just... Oh. Yeah.
I know. It's frustrating. You know, when you look in the hunting regulations and whatever new premier that we have, they always see something at least about the hunting regulations, about hunting or the heritage. But whenever the Prime Minister's picture goes in the hunting res, they always say something nice about hunting. She didn't say a word. Said something totally opposite, had nothing to do with hunting, which was just one of her liberal campaign slogans. She never even, you know, acknowledged the hunters or the sportsmen. She just made some off comment that had nothing to do with the regulations. Where every other premier, he's always said something about the proud tradition of hunting in Ontario and everything else. She didn't say anything. My party is going to do this towards the future. She put her picture in and then ignored us. And then she taxes us on firewood.
Oh, just, yeah. It just blows my mind. I don't know what to say. I'm trying to watch what I say just so I don't have to add an explicit tag on the show. So I'm just going to leave it at a big giant sigh. Oh. And that's it.
I guess we're going to closing comments then. We're just about at that time mark, I guess. I lost it here. There it is. Now, I want to continue just one last topic that you finished off on episode 10. We had somebody write in because you said that outside of owning a Glock, you did not know why else people would need to have a jacketed bullet. So let's answer that question.
Who wrote in?
Chris Rakowski?
No, I don't think it was him.
No, it wasn't Chris.
I think it was the guy that was busting my chops when I called shooting a hobby. I think it was that guy.
It could have been. It could have been me. I included some photographs of some different lead projectiles, I believe, too, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure where those are. Those might be in my email somewhere.
Well, see, the no show never came out. The show stopped. So the email never got answered. So I figured since I have the opportunity, I'll answer the email.
I'm just trying to give you credit for the question. So you're essentially you're answering your own question.
I'm answering my own email. Well,
you're answering your own email. That's it.
So me as a loyal listener, I wrote in the show and I sent him some pictures and everything, and then no show for a year and a half. So I'm going back to that freaking question and I'm answering it.
Okay. So outside of a Glock, why would you load jacketed bullets? To me, it seems like it's a waste of money.
At the speeds that you're shooting at, you don't need anything other than lead. You're fine. But bullet designs have to solve two primary problems. In the barrel, they must first form a gas seal with the gun's bore. If a strong steel seal is not achieved from the propellant, it'll actually leak past the bullet and let up the barrel a little bit. Then the bullet must also engage the rifling without damaging or distorting and extremely fouling the gun's bore. So those two things is going to lead to leading anyway. Now, when you get to speeds of like 1,000 feet or more, because using my 9s, I was doing about 850 to start, and I was getting over 1,000 feet per second with my lead, and it was at 1,000 feet, lead is deposited quickly into the rifle bores. And what happens at that speed, actually, if you've got a really super, super hot lead bullet, you're actually vaporizing the end of the barrel or the end of the bullet as it's going through the barrel, and 20, 30 rounds, your barrel is going to be leaded right out. So one thing they do is they alloy or harden the lead with a small percentage of tin or antimony, and this serves to reduce its effect by hardening it, hence the term hard cast. But this grows less effective as velocities and pressures increase. Now, when I wrote in the show, I sent a picture of a plain lead bullet, but at the bottom of the base of the bullet, there's a little cutout, and that cutout is designed for a little tiny cup made of copper. And when it's placed on the base of the bullet, which is called a gas jack, this is used to protect the rear bullet against melting when fired at higher pressures. But this, too, does not solve the problem of higher pressure velocities and with bare lead bullets. Once you get it so fast, you can't use lead at all because it just, even if you put a gas seal on it, the bullet is just such a soft material, it just starts to deteriorate. So when you get into high pressure and rifle cartridges, they have projectiles that are specifically constructed to withstand the forces generated and perform a specific task upon impact. And the really fast projectiles are usually a full metal jacket or with a lead core or a solid metal design. So basically, the faster it goes, it's going to start melting. It leads it up. So you try to put a gas seal, stops it a little bit. But if you want to get really high pressure velocities, you want to go to a plated. And then plated are only good for so long, and then you have to, or such a speed, and then you have to move up to a full metal jacket. Just because the barrels can't handle that speed and velocity with lead. So that's what I wrote into the show, basically.
And thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And
I answered my own question.
Yes. So that, I think, is going to bring us to the end of the show. So I would like to ask everybody to support one or all of the following organizations, the CSSA, NFA, the new one that we learned about today, the CFI, or the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters, OFAH. Now, if you're outside of Ontario, I'm sure you probably have your own provincial organization. So obviously, you know, if you're out in Alberta, support your Alberta conservation. You know, if you're not a hunter, you know, you're probably wondering why. I can't speak for outside of Ontario, but during the whole gun registry debacle and then debates and everything else that were going on when they're getting rid of that, they were running articles that were against not only the gun registry, but they were also being very friendly towards the recreational shooter, pistol shooters, ARs. They were speaking up on their behalf. I know that's been a big criticism in the past. You know, the FUDs only care about the hunting rifles and throw the AR guys under the bus.
There are a few FUDs in there, but on the whole, it's a good group.
Yeah. So, you know, I use the term hunter loosely because I've still yet to kill anything and harvest it. But I've been out there. McClatchy and I would make great hunting buddies. Although he sees more than I do. I've almost stepped on a grouse once, and that's it. And I've seen lots of tracks. And I shared my hunt, my deer story last episode. So, you know.
Well, he does do well bullfrog hunting.
Yes. I think Trevor posted up a picture on Facebook, frying pan full of bullfrog legs. So please, I've yet to try them. So please support one of them. These groups are out to protect our rights and to protect our guns. So it only makes sense to throw some money behind one or all of them. I know memberships aren't cheap, but it's a lot better than having a 10-pound paperweight that you can't take to the range anymore.
True.
So for emails and shout outs, Tom, what do you got?
We didn't have any emails. I'd like to give a shout out to Chris Rakowski. He saved me some money on getting these ThinkPad IBM T520 laptops. He got me a great deal on two computers. So, and then he also gave me a lot of really useful information about recording and mixing podcasts. So we might be able to improve the show quality down the road once I get some equipment. But Chris was very helpful in the information department. Right now we're using Skype, so there has been issues.
Yeah, and George's laptop might be going out to the range soon. And not for good reasons. It may be going out to the range and not coming back.
I do that with my cell phone once. I like to cancel my policy. Boom.
It only took us, 45 minutes to get to finally hit the record button because of me?
Well, you had all the updates and everything, too. That was slowing everything right down. Well, yeah. This is actually our second attempt recording this. We tried this last week when I was really, really sick, and my laptop died three-quarters of the way through the show, so we had to redo it and edit it. And then we still had problems. We're listening to the feedback. I'm listening to the raw tape, and the two voices were out of sync, so we're talking at the same time, and you couldn't figure it, screw it, we'll just redo it over again when we had the chance. So,
yeah. So with that, I would like to thank Filthy. The comment on Facebook is getting a little dated. Like Tom just said, we did try to get this out last week. This is take two. But Filthy did leave us a comment on Facebook regarding the show, so thank you, Filthy. Sometimes you gotta scrape the bottom of the barrel, right?
Oh, shut up.
I should also mention Styx. He did bust my chops and kind of browbeat me a little bit because I was within, I believe, a couple hours of him on my trip down to the States, and I didn't say hello to him. So, Styx, I love the South. I love driving, and I will most definitely be going back to the South. It's usually about every other year I make a trip down there, so it won't be 2015, but maybe either late 2015 or 2016. But I will look you up.
We might see him this summer at the charity shoot.
Yes. Yes. So get your passport. Man up. Buck up. Get your passport. Yes. Edith has one. So there you go.
I'm sure Melissa will get Toby in line, no problem, because she loves Facebook. So she definitely wants to meet Matthew.
So no busting my chops if you're going to drag your feet and not come up here. And the drive out to New Brunswick is probably going to be almost as long for me as it will be for you.
Yeah, 16 hours.
Yeah. I don't know if going down through the south of the Great Lakes is going to be much shorter for him. Well, he's coming from the Memphis area, so obviously it is going to be a longer drive, but it's not going to be a short drive for me either, so I'm putting in the time stick. So you get your passport and get your ass up here.
It was worth it. I went last year and I had a great time. So if all the American podcasters would come, that would be awesome. I'd love to meet the whole gang.
I was a cracked engine and a thrown out back away from making it last year. Last January. Well, and then we had the labor disruption at work, so that was the end of it.
Yeah, I told you financially.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make it out this year. I haven't given any commitments to it yet, so. But I will do my best.
I didn't book the week off, but I kept a week of holidays back, so I can still get that week off if I want it. I'm planning on going out.
Yeah, I've got till January 1st to book my holidays, so I haven't sat down and looked at a calendar yet. So that's the only reason why I'm not committing yet. In my heart, I've committed, but on paper, I haven't yet. And that is going to do it for me. So until next time, keep your barrels downrange and smoking.
Take a kid shooting. Have a good night.
Take care, guys. Bye.
I like guns. I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small.
Thank you for taking the time and listening to our show. Our audience is important to us, and we encourage our listeners to contact the show with feedback, suggestions, or questions that you may have. You can contact the guys at hosts@newshootercanada.ca. And please like our Facebook page. Thanks for listening, and have a groovy day.
God made the animals, and God made the trees. God made you, well, hell, he even made me. He gave me this voice so I could be a singer. So you tell me why I've got a trigger finger. I like guns, I like the way they look. I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small. They're for sale, well, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns. I like guns, I like guns. I like guns.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of New Shooter Canada. Today we're going to talk... you know what? That sucked. Hold on a sec.